Welcome to the Lion's Roar podcast from the publishers of Lion's Roar magazine and Bodhidharma, the practitioner's guide. I'm Sandra Hannebohm. You've already heard that you should meditate. Maybe you even have an established meditation practice. But sometimes we forget why we meditate. What exactly is it good for? What does it do? Today, Daniel Goleman and Sukhni Rinpoche, two brilliant meditation teachers, each in their own right, talk with Lion's Roar's Rod Mead Sperry about why we meditate and their new book titled, appropriately enough, Why We Meditate, The Science and Practice of Clarity and Compassion.
I'm speaking now to Sukhni Rinpoche and Daniel Goleman, co-authors of the new book, Why We Meditate. It would be an honor and a privilege to speak to either of you individually. It's so wonderful to speak to you both at the same time. So thank you for joining me.
Our pleasure.
Yes. Likewise, it seems like a special event for you to have collaborated on this book. How did this book come to be?
Well, it's an interesting story. The seed was planted when I was at a retreat at Garrison Institute with Sukhni Rinpoche. And I had just finished a book with Richard Davidson, who's a neuroscientist at Wisconsin, reviewing all of the very strong studies on meditation. And it made it very clear that there was something happens when you meditate. And the more you meditate, the more that happens. And it's very beneficial. So Rinpoche said, why don't you give a talk to the people at the retreat about these findings? I gave the talk. And Rinpoche said, you know, my Asian students would be very interested in this. Then we thought, well, maybe we'll do a book that reviews not just why to meditate, but how to meditate and what the science says that supports meditation.
Wonderful. Well, so let's start with that title. Why do we meditate, or why should we, I guess is what we should say. You know, being a meditator myself, I, of course, have all my own assumptions and I've heard lots of stories, but now I'm talking to a teacher and a scientist and I've put down all my assumptions and would love to hear from you.
Well, I think there are several phases in the answer to why we meditate. I think it changes. I know for me, I began because I was an undergraduate. I was uptight. I was anxious. It calmed me. It helped me focus. Later, I got more interested in the states of mind that meditation would induce. And then I went on to study with Tibetan teachers. My first meditation was TM. My second was Vipassana. And then my third has been studying with Sukhni Rinpoche and other members of his amazing family. You know, he comes from one of the most distinguished meditation families in Tibet, now in Nepal. His great-grandfather founded the Chökyur Lingpa lineage. His grandmother was a very advanced meditator. Many people in his family, their four brothers, all sons of Tulku Urgyen, who himself was an amazing meditator. And so there's Sukhni Rinpoche, Chökyi Nyima Rinpoche, Choling passed away recently, and Mingyur Rinpoche, all sons of Tulku Urgyen, and each of them quite an amazing teacher.
Hmm. You mentioned your own stress and anxiety, Dan, and Rinpoche, you too have talked about stress and anxiety in your lives. You're both long-time meditators, but you've had these experiences of anxiety, stress, worry. That's really kind of important and even somewhat encouraging to the rest of us who may not have logged as many meditation hours as you. Can you say something about how meditation has helped you personally, each of you?
I think at the beginning, because of mindfulness, awareness, and aware of your things, what happening in your feeling world and your thoughts, so you directly connect or contact with that. And then there is a way you can communicate, because through self-reflecting, through awareness of your phenomena inside, and then there is a way that blockages, anxiety, stress, whatever, is not that real your true nature. A true nature is much more open than that. It's kind of lucid nature. spacious, and at the same time, it has a compassionate, loving energy within yourself. So through the technique of meditation, you connect with those original state of your being, and whatever stress, whatever anxiety, slowly, like start to open up. And then when you open up, then you find really peace, calm, relaxed, and open. And that is actually your real nature. And then the nature shines out as a compassionate action to other people. So this is the process. I think we are doing that.
Thank you, Rinpoche. Would you say that it's fair to say that this is a practice that even someone who's spent as much time meditating as you have would all benefit by returning to the practice? It's not that we become good meditators and we find this sort of wellspring of strength and resilience and openness and communication in ourselves. These things can come and go. So we should return to meditation throughout our lives. Yes?
Yes, correct. I think first we have to find our innermost organic natural state. And then through the mindfulness and awareness, and we keep connecting with our resource, our nature, through reminding again and again. But as speaking of like anxiety or, you know, some emotional blockages, if you have, I usually call a beautiful monsters. If you don't have, you are not normal. So we all have something, but we should not identify it. That is our own nature. That is, you know, comes as a condition. But if we have a good condition, it will transform.
Hmm.
But initial point, initial stage, you know, when something triggers for me, you know, I have a few things. Some occasion triggers me, it pops up. That through the meditation power, I will not drag into it. I will not absorb into it. It just takes 1 or 2 seconds, then it will slowly open up. So nowadays, if something there, something bothering me, is really bothering me ultimate way. It's enough to recognize, enough to see what is happening, but then I can slowly, like let it go.
I think for beginners, Rinpoche has several, a sequence of methods that help someone who's never done this before handle what he's calling beautiful monsters. We can call them self-defeating emotional patterns.
Mm.
I talked to my wife, Tara Bennett Goldman, who's a cognitive therapist who brought mindfulness to it, a lot about this.
Right. Correct.
To understand the patterns that afflict Western students particularly. And so Rinpoche has developed methods that help them along that path to get to the point where he was just describing. So right at the beginning, it's not so easy, but slowly you can get better at managing your own, the patterns that keep coming up, that torpedo your relationships or that you worry about all the time, whatever it may be. I hope by the end of our podcast, maybe Rinpoche can share a method that would help people.
We would be very, very happy to have that happen. So when we're talking about these quote unquote beautiful monsters, these challenging emotional patterns, Rinpoche in the book suggests that we address them with the attitude of what he calls handshake. In our minds, we are shaking hands with them and simply meeting them. Right. And that this can be healing. What I'd like to know is, can you talk about why is this healing? How does this meeting and this facing of our patterns make a difference? How does that work?
I'm sure the cognitive understanding of that very important, but the cognitive insight need to transmit into the feeling world. So there's always has a mind and body disconnected. So the handshake is first the mind and the feeling world start to make a friendship, working together with the manner of love and kind in the form of mind is not rejecting the uneasiness in the feeling. It's like more like embarrassing.
Embracing.
Embracing and being with that, with a gentleness, not suppressing, not indulging, not running away from it, not trying to fix the state. It's just relaxly kind of the mind is, I'm here with you. And then slowly the mind and the feeling will start to become friend. Then the knowledge from cognitive mind slowly, slowly transmit into the feeling world. And the feeling start to feel like, oh, this is fine. This is okay. This is not me. This is my leftover imprint. It's just been triggered. Okay, relax, relax. That need to feel it. It's not like a feeling, thinking is saying to the feeling, oh, you are like that, you are like that, you should be this, it's okay, let it go. But emotionally, it might not let it go. So in order to, within the emotion, it need to open up. I think mind need to be, cognitive mind need to be calm and together without disturbing, be with that. So I call being with the beautiful monster is the first step, if you can. And second step, communication. Okay, slowly, slowly, when beautiful monster start to open up, then you can bring all your knowledge, what you know about from the science, cognitive science, from your from your experience of learning something, slowly we can transmit into the feeling. The main point is this one. The feeling start to feel like what the mind is trying to communicate. It's not my nose. So the biggest problem I found in the world, especially in the West, all the solution is in the mind. But the feeling world left out. And how these two come together and transform.
Right.
I think the transformation, real transformation, is coming from the feeling world, not from the thinking world.
And this is a very different approach, Rod, from, you know, people tend to either tune out, they don't want to face the feeling. Rinpoche's talking about cognitively handling it. You know, in your mind, you say, oh, this is just that. It's a way of dismissing it. What Rinpoche is talking about is really being with the feeling. And what I found when I looked at the Western scientific literature, there's some very good research, for example, at Stanford, on tuning into your feelings, even uncomfortable feelings, and accepting them. I think this is a method of acceptance, what's actually there, wouldn't you say?
Accepting, I call, is it is real, but not true. You accept the pain of that feeling, but actually the pain is carrying a wrong message. And how do you communicate to the pain of the feeling, let it go, the feeling of pain? Within the pain, within the feeling. Not like your mind is saying, yes, this is like this. But actually the feeling start to feel, okay, it's not like that. It is painful, but I'm carrying the old leftover stuff. But it's not accepting the pain, but you accept us as that moment, but you go beyond, because beyond is the openness.
So this accepting, that's the difference between, well, I guess what I note in the book is, you know, we've said that we need to just be with our feelings and that to just be is not to fix. But it's not entirely true to say that there's no fixing going on here, right? It's more that what isn't helpful is that we're bringing a mind that seeks to fix.
But your mind is not fixing.
Right.
Yeah. But it will fix by itself. The emotions start to open up, then you can call it fixing. But it's not like a dualistic kind of fixing. This is no good, and I'm going to bring that method, and then you will be okay. It's not like that. You just fully be with the feeling, with the full trust, the feeling will open. But you are not opening. The feeling is opening by itself. Hmm. That's called, in the, our language, we call self-liberation. It is liberating by itself. You are just bringing the condition, and the beautiful master has his own capable or capacity to open up.
But sure. I think it's important, Ron, that people understand that what Rinpoche is describing is a little more advanced ability, and that there are steps toward that that anybody can take. And in sure. fact, in the book, Why to Meditate, which is really how to meditate.
So
you so, show that.
For example, I have a, like, you know, mind has a four different ways of expression. One is called thinking mind. One is called knowing mind. One is called awareness of mind. One is called clarity of mind. So I want my friends to drop the thinking mind first, not the knowing mind, not awareness, not the clear of mind, clarity, because thinking mind right now is disturbed by some other stuff. So you will think same thing again and again. So mm-hmm. drop that into your body, invite knowing mind, and with awareness, and you're aware of your body sensation, emotional sensation, then maybe there's within the emotion, there's maybe a difficult one. Just stay with that and just say, hi. Hi. Hi, I'm here. I'm not come here to do anything. I just want to be there. Because thinking mind will start to judge. I'm not judging. I'm just being there. I know. I'm aware. I can feel it. And then just make connection again and again and again. Then start feeling, start to trust the mind, because the mind is not hammering. Mind is, thinking mind is not beating. I like, I don't like. There's no reaction from the thought to disturb the feeling world. And feeling has a, you know, very, very beautiful thing. It will open up because we are not allowed to open up. It wants to open up because we keep react towards to the difficult feeling. So difficult feeling has capacity to open up. So just wait. I call wait. Waiting is kindness. Being is kindness. That's loving lovely. Is kindness. Listening is kindness. You just listen and relax there. Be there. I'm sure it is, you know, the feeling will start to trust you. And you trust. And out of trusting something, a beautiful thing can come out. I call essence love, basic well-being, okayness. Sorry to talk too much.
Not at all. Not at all. Let's talk about that idea of essence love, which in the book you just defined as a basic okayness underlying the feeling world. And you noted that this essence love is something quite subtle. Can any of us access this feeling of basic okayness, even if it generally eludes us on a day-to-day basis? If we don't feel a general feeling of okayness, how are we going to access that feeling?
Okayness is within you. The essence love is within you. I call it birthright. But access to or connecting to it, I think you have to connect with any form of feeling, even the sensation. You have to be with that. And the layers of feeling start to open up. Then there's a genuine feeling of well-being, the ready to love. You feel okay. And people ask you, why you feel okay? I don't know. I just feel okay. It's not because of you feel okay something. You love because of something. Is the radiant of love, is the ball of love, is the heat of the fire, is not burning anything, is not doing anything, it's just your core spark. And we must nurture that. Nurturing in the sense of being with that. Acknowledge that. Say hi to it and make it is kind of valuable thing that gives you inner peace, inner strength. Danny, you want to say some more about this?
I think that's good.
You mentioned love, Rinpoche, and in the book you talk about love and compassion. What in for us meditators and undertaking the practices in this book, what should we understand the difference between the two to be?
Love appreciates well-being, beauty, caring of someone's well-being. You know, compassion out of love, then there is, you want to engage more into yourself or someone's life, then there is a suffering. There's a difficulties. There's a problem. So the urge come not only bringing well-being, but trying to free from the suffering, free from the difficulties. So there is a very genuine, wanting to eliminate or trying to transform or someone's suffering. So you are more engaging in someone's suffering, wanted to do something that is the compassion. You want to more bring well-being, the flower of life, the beauty of the life. So that is more loving. So loving is engaging with the beauty of the life. Yeah. And the compassion, because you cannot be always in the beauty of life. You know, life is a mix of so many things.
The science on this is really interesting. It turns out that when most people tune into compassion, it means being with the suffering of someone else. It's very different than loving kindness. Loving kindness is wishing them well. It's kind of happy. Compassion is empathy with the other person's pain. And so many people get taken over by the other person's pain and handle it by tuning out. This is what the research shows very strongly. Mm. What Rinpoche is saying is if you bring love, say you have a 2-year-old who has a tantrum, you love the 2-year-old, you're willing to put up with the tantrum because of the love for the child. It's the same thing with compassion. When you add the love, then you can be with the pain and not tune out, but stay with it.
And the most important thing for me is even love and loving kindness, I think we have to go more one step back, find essence of love first, the okayness within yourself. Because if you don't feel okayness within yourself, we feel hollow. Mm. And from the hollow, whatever you do, and there's some consequences,
it doesn't work out, right?
It doesn't all work out completely. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just finding your basic well-being, and out of that, and then, a little bit coming to the well-being of others, which is loving kindness, and then go for the, helping for reducing the suffering. While you're doing that, you still have some connection in your well-being. Otherwise, the compassion will make you difficult.
I think that's true. And I think that the scientific research says the same thing in a different way, which is that you, in order to help someone else, you need to have an inner platform which is more stable.
Right.
And what Rinpoche is calling essence love gives you that sense of being okay, even in the face of the other person's pain.
Correct.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. You in the book, it states that the book covers basic mindfulness, but also takes us far beyond. And I'm wondering if in saying that you feel that the way mindfulness is talked about today, if something is largely being missed.
I think so, because it's, mindfulness is spread into schools and into businesses. And as it's spread, it's been watered down. The classical mindfulness in the basic Asian tradition includes, for example, devotion. It includes a vision toward a higher reach, if you will, inside.
Ethics.
and an ethical sense is very important. All of that gets left behind when it goes to a company, for example. So you do get some basic benefits. You get more calm. You're less reactive. You can pay attention better. You can multitask better, it turns out. However, these are beginning level benefits. So when Rinpoche is talking about something deeper, cultivating essence love, cultivating this core of well-being, of okayness, I don't think that ordinary mindfulness, as it's taught in the West, gets there. I think this is a deeper dive. And I encourage it. And in the book, Why We Meditate, Rinpoche describes a series of practices that will take you along that path.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, first of all, it's always just an incredible privilege to practice with people like the two of you. But I'd love the audience to be able to do that too. And we talked about Rinpoche leading us in the practice known as dropping, which is introduced early in the book and is found throughout the book. It gets us ready for meditation by helping us drop out, so to speak, of our thinking minds and get in touch with our bodies. Could we, in fact, have Rinpoche lead us in a taste of this practice?
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
First, relax your body. And then I'll call 1, 2, 3. And then you just drop the thinking mind into the body. 1, 2, 3. Just noticed and aware of your body. And relax. And aware of your feelings. The physical feelings. Relax with that. You are not inviting any special feelings. Whatever is there, just be aware of it and relax. Relax is important. And then just feel or aware of any emotional feelings like dislike, any emotional state, pleasant, unpleasant feelings, painful or joyful, just aware of it and relax. Let it go of everything. Just aware of that. And the feelings start to change. Let it change. You are not changing. The feeling itself is changing. Let it change. And there's maybe some openness. Maybe some difficult emotions. Just stay there and say hi and smile. I'm sure we all have something. Just aware of that and smile it. And stay nearby or stay with it. The mind awareness is be with the feeling or emotions, especially difficult emotions. Be kind. Non-judging is the kindness. Not suppressing is the kindness. Kindness comes into many forms. Not indulging is kindness. Not ignoring or running away from is also kindness. Just be fully present with that emotional blockages. If you have, I call beautiful monsters, because it has a beautiful elements. Every blockage, every difficult emotion carries beautiful also. So let beautiful show, let it open up without doing nothing. Just being with it is the best kindness. Not disturbing is the kindness. Listen whatever beautiful monster wants to tell you. Just listen. Listen again and again. And relax. Sometimes it will be a little bit difficult. Sometimes easier. Then beautiful monster has, you know, beautiful stuff can open up. You understand other people's world. You understand your phenomena. Out of that, great compassion might come. You will understand other people's, you know, stuff. Wisdom can come out of that. And eventually the beautiful monster start to trust you. And then there is well-being starts. It's one of our two innate nature called essence love. I call it okayness. A little bit of joy, but without any external reason. Not because of this, not because of that. Itself is a joy. Inner strength, inner well-being. Connect with that is your fundamental right to connect with that. And we are losing that. Not losing completely, but we're losing connection. When we are a child, we had that spontaneous, little bit of joy, open, free, humorous. Just connect with that one more time. And some openness will come out of that. And out of essence love, loving kindness will merge. Out of loving kindness, compassion will come. Out of compassion, bodhicitta, the highest form of compassion, might come. And that is how we should be. Internally and externally, we should handle everything in a peaceful manner, compassionate way, and save the world. Once you are not hollow, I think you will understand the needs for the world peacefully. Compassionate world. I think we have to start from ourselves also. Thank you.
Thank you, Rinpoche. That was wonderful. I just wanted to follow up with that. The book also contains what you call drop it all mantras, phrases recited internally to help us with our practice. And I'd love to hear from each of you, from your perspectives, about how these mantras help us.
I think it's like, we overcare. Like the care usually is very healthy, but we overly care, then it's become unhealthy. So we have to drop that. Like a me, mine, my world, my thing, with like overly care, care for, but it's not become healthy. It's become like almost like a self-centered cherishing, kind of unhealthy way of cherishing, not the healthy cherished. So you have to drop in your mind, like whatever happens, happen. Whatever doesn't happen, happen. Who cares? So what? How? Like, drop into the body, let it go, stay there for a while. Then come into all the extra luggage you drop. When you relax, you cannot carry backpack. You just drop the backpack, completely relax, connect with your being, Then when you start to take your journey, then you take your back and you go, you climb mountain. Because when you relax, you carry the whole bag with you, relax. I think it's not, because my point of view is we all don't know how to let it go when we need. We sort of let it go in our head. Let it go, let it go, let it go. But from the feeling, we cannot let it go, still holding on something. So in order to transmit into your feeling world, you need this mantra. Let it go. Drop. So what? Whatever happens, happen. Whatever doesn't happen, doesn't happen. Doesn't matter. It's okay. You know, just, and then real care comes, a genuine care, genuine love. The extra burden care kind of will not distort it. Our genuine care.
And from a Western point of view, you know, I think it's very healing. It's almost an antidote to over-worrying. We get so preoccupied with our ruminations and our anxieties, and they keep coming back and coming back. And what Rinpoche is doing is helping us cut through that so that you just let go. I mean, the mantra is powerful. Who cares? What happens, happens. What a different attitude. That is such an antidote to being so worried about what's going to happen, to caring too much, as Rinpoche said. So the mantra, which is helpful, when you drop, you can put your hands up in the air and go, let it go on your knees.
Yeah, drop like, ah.
And then you say to yourself, who cares? Wow, that's different.
And just to make clear to the listeners, when we're saying internally as a mantra, who cares, so what? These are literally the mantras, right? Yeah. These mantras are very plain language, colloquial things that we might say to ourselves in our better moments.
Sure.
Who cares, so what? Let it go.
That's right.
Yeah. That real care will come. The distorted kind of care, over anxious. Oh, this cannot be done, that cannot be done. This might hurt me, this might do this. Like a lot of thoughts in our mind, and the feelings start to like cling into it, and our feeling will also become very uptight. So I want to have, you know, drop all of that and then stay in the openness for a while. Naturally, there is concern and care will come. That is the flower.
One last question, if I may. I just wanted to know what your individual and collective hopes are for the book and what it teaches, and what's next for you together, is if there will be more work along these lines coming from you together as a team, or if that's even talked about.
So, Rod, we want to see how this book reaches people. Our hope is that people, for example, who are just considering meditating will use it as a guide. People who are meditators but want to help someone else start will also give this book as a gift, for example. We see it as for people who really don't have a practice yet or who are cultivating a practice to help them get better. We haven't talked about future projects. You never know. We didn't expect this one. Okay. We'll see.
Lovely. Well, that's great. That's great. Well, if just being with our feelings or just being with anything is, as Rinpoche said, a kindness, I want to thank you for just being with us and the kindness of doing that. It's been wonderful to talk to you, and congratulations on this very helpful and lovely book.
Thank you, Rod. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rinpoche.
Thanks for listening. Mission-driven, nonprofit, and community-supported, Lion's Roar offers Buddhist teachings, news, and perspectives so that the understanding and practice of Buddhism flourish in today's world and its timeless wisdom is accessible to all. We do this by providing as many entry points as we can through print and digital publications, website, video, social media, online courses, practice retreats, and more. We try to bring Dharma to people right where they are, knowing the difference it can make in their lives. You can help us spread the Dharma by leaving ratings and reviews. Or go to lionsroar.com to subscribe and get unlimited access to online articles, new magazine issues, several collections, plus perks and exclusives from Lion's Roar Magazine and from Buddha Dharma, the Practitioner's Guide.